It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. As always, thank you for joining us and our special show, How Difficult Is It to Be a White Man in America Today? But as always, we will start our first by spending a few minutes on the news. And the big news from this week, solar eclipse. Yeah, maybe for some of us it was a bit of a letdown on what you actually saw. But then, when you explain to your children what it is you were seeing, that's where the coolness was. Also, coolness from the solar eclipse. We had a solar eclipse throughout the entirety of America, and there was not a single report of a witch burning by any Trump supporter in the aftermath. So we are obviously making great strides as a country. Speaking of Donald Trump, a lot of people are saying it was another bad week for Donald Trump. Or, as his supporters say, good week. Starting out Trump's bad week, losing his far right-hand man, Steve Bannon, banished from the administration, left so he could spend more time, apparently, with his flexibility coach. I'll pause for a second and let that one rattle around until you figure that one out, and then you'll laugh. Some dispute as to the terms under which Steve Bannon left. But if this was a power play and a move to clean things up in the administration by Trump's new chief of staff, General Kelly, then it's apparently not working. Why? Because the idiot in chief has not been banished from the administration. And while they're trying to clean up and get the far-right nationalists, white supremacist supporters out of the administration, Donald Trump is tweeting away and speaking away and still going in front of TV cameras, where he pointed out all the good people who were marching with the neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and the white supremacists. Do we really need to say that if you are marching with the neo-Nazis, that's a pretty strong indicator that you are absolutely not a good person? In fact, as we mentioned on last week's show, many of the people in the far right white supremacist movement did not attend the rally because they did not want to be associated with the neo-Nazis and some of the other groups in the rally. But Donald Trump wants us to bring our sensitivity to the white supremacists and the Nazis. Oh, great. It's almost fun. Schadenfreude can be fun to watch the Republican Party riven by Trump's antics, by his statements in the White House or near the White House, about the White House. The battle lines are clearly being drawn here, as we talked about last week. People are lined up on both sides to criticize Trump or not. You know you're in trouble when Donald Trump's one of his most loyal business supporters and insider, Steven Schwarzman, may have pounded in the final nail when he left, resigned from the council he was on, and said that he could not stomach Trump's statements in support, basically, of neo-Nazis. Steven Schwarzman is a man, as we mentioned before on the show, he knows about Nazis. As a few years ago, this billionaire investor, private equity investor, referred to government efforts to reduce unwanted tax loopholes that brilliant lawyers had figured out for billionaires like himself, financial investors. Loopholes that were not supposed to exist. When people were trying to close them, Steven Schwarzman famously said, "This is like something out of Nazi Germany." Well, tax cuts out of Nazi Germany were bad. And at some point, after several days of other people quitting, it turns out even white supremacy, bigotry, violence, and hatred from the Nazis. That was bad too, I guess. Okay. Donald Trump responds to criticism by piling on the red meat, reaching out to his base, throwing the dogs a bone, floating the idea that he might pardon Sheriff Joe Arpaio, hero of the bigoted sect. The New York Times and others have pointed out the chaos in the administration. The Times noted that the president's top advisors are describing themselves as stunned, despondent, and numb by the president's refusal to unequivocally call out the largest and lowest scum on the planet. Several Trump advisors said they were unable to see how Mr. Trump's presidency would recover. Others expressed doubts about his capacity to do the job. Now you have doubts about his capacity to do the job? With all due respect, where have you been for the past 7 months? Oh, right, in the administration. Donald Trump? Well, he apparently felt liberated by his unfettered joining of the right. There was criticism within the Republican Party. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee questions Trump's stability. Again, something we've been questioning on this show for, I don't know, 5 months now? How long has the show been on the air? Because he's been unstable for a really long time, Bob, but at least you're catching on. As opposed to most congressional Republicans, fewer than one-fifth of whom have actually come out and criticized Trump for his statements in support of white supremacists. Statements that, again, have emboldened neo-Nazis and Ku Klux Klan members. This is what you call chickens coming home to roost. Remember how we've been talking at length on this show, particularly recently, about the idiocy of people saying, oh, I don't like politicians, they're all bad. Excusing their ignorance and their inability to distinguish between politicians who are not bad, or even politicians who are less bad, and politicians who are really, really, really bad. We pointed out the false equivalency, but let's go a little bit further and understand what's happening right now in the Republican Party. They have created a monster that they can no longer control. When it comes to Republican congresspeople, I assume many of whom are not outright bigots and certainly do not want to side with white supremacists and neo-Nazis, they have a problem. Because while Republican base looks and says, well, they're all bad, politicians are all bad, so I'll just vote for Republicans, the Republican congresspeople are looking at their base and going, these people are such fucking disgraceful morons that I can't do anything that makes a little bit of sense and shows a little bit of reason. I've got to throw the red meat out for these idiots that I've helped create. And they, in fact, are hamstrung, are prevented from doing even the slightest thing that might be right by many of their constituents who are even way worse than the people they've chosen to represent them. Maybe the politicians are in there looking at voters and saying, they're all bad on both sides, although they're not. Anyway, maybe there's some good news coming out of this. We've talked at length in this show about free speech, how we are enforcing it in America for good and for bad. We've talked about, perhaps, the need for limitations on speech. Discussions that have been raised anew with what's happened in Charlottesville and its aftermath. The ACLU, I've spoken of by name, of which I'm a longtime member and supporter, but with whom I've come to disagree frequently on free speech issues. They came out the other day after withering criticism against them for being so absolutist on free speech that they were representing these neo-Nazi and white supremacist groups. And they came out and said, well, we're still in favor of free speech, but we're going to be a little bit more careful about who we choose to defend. And yet, this could be an area where our principles of free speech are actually working. My calls to limit speech out of necessity, in this case, may be inappropriate. Why? Because the aftermath of Charlottesville and Trump's comments have, to a large extent, been inspiring. When it's not about the right-wing bigots getting emboldened by Trump's statements and what's happening, what's been happening is that most people throughout this country and the world have been fighting back. Confederate statues around this country, Confederate monuments, are coming down at increasingly rapid rates. People are outraged by what these jackasses had to say and do. This is what free speech is supposed to do. It's supposed to let people respond appropriately to inappropriate speech. What's happening in the Republican Party, just so we're clear on this, they've been spending decades issuing dog whistles to many of their racist constituents. Because as we've mentioned at length, the Republican Party needs a big turnout in the bigot vote to get elected. But they don't want to alienate people on the right who may not like overtly racist images, who may not want to vote for someone wearing a Nazi uniform. So they've learned to do dog whistles. Speak subtly. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. You bigots know what I'm talking about. And to the rest of you, turn around and say, racist? Me? That wasn't intended to be racist. Oh my God, how could you think that that's racist? My Willie Horton ad? Oh no, that's not racist at all. Wink, wink to the racists. So the Republican Party right now, those who are criticizing Trump, effectively are saying, you need to be more subtle, dude. We're big on subtlety. We're not overt racists. We're just promoting covert racists. Well, we're promoting overt racists too. We're more covert racists. And that's going to be much of the substance of today's show. But there was other news aside from Charlottesville. Some of you may have heard that the president has gone back on his longtime campaign rhetoric against the Afghanistan war and against sending troops to Afghanistan. No surprise that Trump didn't believe anything that he was saying. So we are increasing our troop presence in Afghanistan. I'd like to tell you what I think about that. I tend to be against it, but I want to be clear that I don't really know very much about the specifics of the Afghanistan war, the longest war in U.S. history already. Maybe more troops will help turn things around. I tend to doubt it. But what concerns me is that as little as I know about Afghanistan and the war there, I know I still probably know more than the President of the United States whose decision this supposedly was. This brings us back to all our discussions about the fact that this country is effectively being run by generals or ex-generals. Maybe they're good people, maybe they're thoughtful, maybe they're not clouded, their judgment is not clouded by their history with war in the military. But it would be nice to feel that there were some civilian grown-ups making these difficult decisions. The Interior Department halts a study of the health effects of mountaintop removal mining. We have talked about this, of mountaintop removal mining, in the past. Basically, it's to mine, which is done in much of the middle of this country, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, by basically blowing apart mountains so that you can get at all the ore and whatever you're mining for underneath it. Well, inquiring minds might want to know, but this administration does not have inquiring minds, and they don't want to know, and more importantly, they sure as hell don't want you to know. So studies that have been already underway for a long time, studying the health effects of mountaintop removal mining, are being ended, suspended by the Interior Department while they do a review. Previous studies have indicated higher mortality, lung cancer, kidney disease, and birth defects. Oh, whatever. There's money to be made, so we don't want to know about these things. If only the earlier studies had indicated that it was causing people to get abortions. Because if it was indicating that people were getting abortions, then one would assume that at least the vice president would be strongly against changing this and allowing mountaintop removal minings. This is why education, thought, and information matters. And this is another example that the people running our country, and I don't just mean Donald Trump, this is the Republican Party, are averse to information, education, good decision making. This is done by the Interior Department, where several reports have shown that the Interior Department staffers, political staffers, are basically fossil fuel lobbyists who have been rolling back regulations at a fevered clip since they went into the Interior Department. More people will get sick, more people will die. Many of them were Trump voters. They're not getting their job back, but the important thing is the people who own these companies are going to get richer and richer and richer. This is the result of government not doing what it's supposed to, and the fact that many of the ignoramuses out there have no idea the extent to which government is keeping them healthy and maybe even alive. And that extent is dwindling all the time. Speaking of which, also in the news, massive media deregulation aimed to benefit Sinclair Broadcasting so it can own even more media outlets throughout America, increase monopolies in certain areas. Why would they do this? Well, Sinclair promises to continue its efforts to promote a right-wing view and get Republicans elected so that Sinclair can make even more and more money by lying to people. Isn't it great? It all comes around full circle. And don't think we've forgotten about Russia. Let's end the news and move on at this point with a brief discussion of Russian news. Somehow white supremacy has pushed Russia off the front pages, but they were on the front pages a few days ago when it turns out a Ukrainian hacker who has been responsible for much of enabling much of the hacking that's been done, it turns out, and you can imagine the quaking on Capitol Hill in the White House right now, this hacker has been helping the FBI, has turned state's evidence, and is apparently cooperating and being a witness for the FBI. Stay tuned to this one. Okay, for our main subject for today's show, and this is important for me, just how difficult is it for people like me to go through America as a white male? This is fundamentally what's behind the debate. Sure, the neo-Nazi and the white supremacists are out there. We still hope that they are a very small percentage of this country, as we've talked about before. Not small enough, but we hope they're a small percentage. And yet, neo-Nazi and white supremacist light seems to be ruling the day. White people complaining that they are under siege. White people, white men. The Trump phenomenon, the rise of the angry white male. Well, what does the white male have to be angry about? Let's talk about our history a little bit. In 1966, fewer than 1% of federal judges were women. Fewer than 4% of lawyers and 7% of doctors were women. You could be fired if you got married, pregnant, unattractive, or turned 30. Ah, yes, what we now know as the good old days, if we're a Trump voter. There are people alive today who were alive when women were still denied the right to vote. For African Americans, their history in America looks even more blatantly worse than that. Coming to this country in chains, literally, for scores of years, and then enslaved, beaten, murdered, if that was the master's whim. Families broken up. This was the reality for African Americans in this country. Overall, again, for many, many scores of years. Then we had a civil war. We fought to end slavery. At least half this country did. And that's the half that won. And in the wake of the Civil War, we enacted the 13th Amendment, banning slavery. And the 14th Amendment, two of the three Reconstruction Amendments after the Civil War. The 14th Amendment, among other things, promising equal rights in this country, aimed clearly in the wake of the Civil War at African Americans, but stating that government cannot treat people unequally. Government could not treat people unequally? Well, so things got rosy in this country for African Americans in the 1860s, right? Well, obviously, not quite. It was at least another 100 years before even the faintest outline of the benefits of the Equal Protection Act were actually felt by African Americans. 100 years of segregation, outright segregation. Some of you may have seen the recent movie Loving. Probably not many of you. I don't think many people did, unfortunately. About a couple, a mixed race couple, who wanted to get married in the late 1960s in Virginia. But under Virginia law, and the law of many states in America at the time, blacks could not marry whites. Until the 1967 Supreme Court case, Loving v. Virginia. Blacks could not eat at the same lunch counters, sit in the same part of the bus, use the same bathrooms or water fountains. This was supposed to be equality. They were routinely denied voting rights. African Americans were prevented from voting, even though it was against the Constitution for 100 years. Things like literacy tests, which were blatantly trumped up and obviously ways just to deny African Americans the right to vote. We had lynchings. If you couldn't have your slaves, you can at least kill the black people who pissed you off. Up until around 1950, after the Civil War, there were more than 4,000 lynchings in just a few southern states. This is what it was like to go through being black in America. In the 1960s, early 1970s, the Republican Party instituted the Southern Strategy as a way to win elections. For those of you who think that I'm being too nasty to Republican voters, this was a Southern Strategy, was a way to win elections by tying Democrats to the party of civil rights. The South, which wouldn't vote Republican for 100 years because Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, now started switching, and now Democrats can't get elected in the South because Democrats were the latest party of civil rights, helping the slaves. Blacks were receiving death threats routinely in school, on college campuses. This is a white academy in a white town in a white county, and by God, it's going to stay that way. We are determined to rid this place of the black blight on our community. Those like you have been run off or killed. You will also just disappear. A hate letter received on a college campus. I have the greatest affection for them, referring to African Americans, a famous American said not too long ago. But I know they ain't going to make it for 500 years. They aren't. You know it too. Now the Mexicans are a different cup of tea. They have a heritage. But at the present time, they steal. They're dishonest. They do a lot of other things. They do have some concept of family life, at least. They don't live like a bunch of dogs, which the Negroes do live like. Which famous American was this? Richard Nixon, while president in the White House, on White House tapes. What else did Richard Nixon say? Later on in the 1970s, after the Supreme Court decided the Roe v. Wade case, which preserved the right to abortion, There are times when an abortion is necessary. I know that. When you have a black and a white. Or a rape. This was the President of the United States in the early to mid-1970s. Terrible history. There was an effort in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement to try to make the Equal Protection Clause a reality for people of color in this country. And we instituted affirmative action policies to help actually create a level playing field and limit discrimination. As President Lyndon Baines Johnson famously said in 1965, you do not take a person who for years has been hobbled by chains and liberate him, bring him up to the starting line of a race, and then say you are free to compete with all the others and still believe that you have been completely fair. In other words, you can't just say, okay, after hundreds of years, starting now, no discrimination, there, all done. It doesn't work that way. We've talked a lot about our racist history, our bigoted history. But let's be clear, it is not just history. And this is an important point. The hate letter I read to you was one received by the president of the Black Caucus at Penn State University in 2001. In 2000, I spoke about Loving v. Virginia, the Supreme Court case which ruled that anti-miscegenation laws, laws preventing blacks from marrying whites, were unconstitutional. And yet the state of Alabama, among other states, still had them on their books, even though they were unenforceable. Some Alabamians thought they kind of looked bad to have this blatantly racist law, so in 2000 there was a ballot initiative to remove the unenforceable anti-miscegenation laws from the books. And to be fair, it passed, with 40% of Alabamians voting to maintain the anti-miscegenation laws on the books. In 2008, Charleston High School in Mississippi held its first racially integrated prom. Hey, we're making progress. 2008, Mississippi, Charleston High School held its first racially integrated prom. The event came about, however, only after the school accepted actor and Charleston native Morgan Freeman's offer to pay for the senior prom. His only condition? That it was integrated, that both blacks and whites could attend the prom. Some whites, however, still held their own whites-only prom. What's equally upsetting is that, according to NPR, Freeman had been offering to pay for this integrated prom since 1997. And for 11 or 12 years, they turned him down because they'd have to go to a prom with black people. We talk about our racist history. Blacks pay more for mortgages. Companies owned by minorities and women are less likely to win government licenses for telephone service. Bankruptcy, blacks are treated worse than whites and sent to more expensive bankruptcy proceedings. Blacks get served slower in restaurants, have to wait longer for cabs, other transportation. Schools remain inherently segregated, with whites tending to go to good white schools, blacks tending to be shunted to poor schools. Treatment by our police and our legal system. We don't tend to see a lot of videos of white people getting shot by the police. As a parent, I will warn my children how to behave with the police, but I will not do it with the urgency that a black parent would need to do to his or her son or daughter, knowing that a black person is more liable to be shot than helped out when times are tough. Donald Trump recently argued that he can't get a fair hearing in front of judges because of racial composition of the grand jury. He complained about a Hispanic judge. Well, guess what most of the judges are in America? If Donald Trump is actually right, yes, it would be a first, but also it would indicate how unfair our legal system is. In schools, when I was a kid and I got into fights, maybe I had my parents called. When black people get into fights, the police get called and they enter the legal system. Stop and frisk. Stand your ground, which is about pretty much allowing white people to shoot black people in the guise of being threatened. We've gotten rid of the Voting Rights Act, or much of it. We've gutted the Voting Rights Act that was instituted to prevent to prevent efforts to stop African Americans from voting. And most of the states in the South have immediately gone out and stopped blacks from voting again. I read you a quote from Richard Nixon. Here's a more recent quote. When Strom Thurmond ran for president, Mississippians voted for him. We're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either. Strom Thurmond was a Dixiecrat who ran for president on a platform of segregation now, segregation forever. He was a segregationist. Those words, we were right to support Strom Thurmond, he was right then and right now, that was Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party in 2002. The Republican Party was outraged by what Trent Lott said and immediately fired him. Just kidding. They did absolutely nothing until the internet went ballistic and forced them to remove him from leadership, only to see him there again a couple years later when everyone's backs had turned. Then there's Justice Scalia. Shortly before he died, there are those who contend that it does not benefit African Americans to get them into the University of Texas where they do not do well, as opposed to having them go to a less advanced school, a slower track school, where they do well. These blatantly racist attitudes translate into admissions, into job offers. We'd like to think that jobs are given out objectively, but they're not. We all interview for them. I got a job at a prestigious law firm by sitting down with two white people and talking about, softball, basketball, making jokes. I don't think the black woman who preceded me, even though I don't think they're racist, people who hired me, probably didn't have the same interview. Affirmative action has been on the run. Efforts to make the Equal Protection Clause a reality, and subsequently the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which also promised a lack of discrimination. Those efforts to make them a reality have been frustrated, ironically, by those very same policies. Affirmative action says we will consider someone's race or sex, hardships that they've overcome in admissions or hiring. And now white males are using the Civil Rights Act and are using Equal Protection Clause to say, wait a minute, if they're considering race to help the downtrodden, then they are violating those laws. And so these policies that were implemented post-Civil War and at the height of the Civil Rights Movement to help the disadvantaged are now being used by the over-advantaged to prevent efforts to help the disadvantaged. Let's go back to that LBJ quote about people who've been hobbled in chains for hundreds of years. The important part of that quote is to focus on how that affects things now. Someone at school who needs bodyguards because of death threats, do you think she's able to compete to the best of her ability with people who are white? People who get waited on slower in restaurants, that affects their ability to compete. People who enter the justice system because they're black and doing the same things white people are. George Bush, before he became president, committed felonies. He didn't go to prison because he was white and had a good name. He became president. 1 in 8 black men are forbidden from voting nationwide. This is the new way to take away their voting rights. Convict them of a felony and take away their voting rights. And yet, George Bush gets to be the president. We are losing the affirmative action battle. Affirmative action is on the run with the new Supreme Court, that much closer to being eliminated. And it is on the run because white people have won the framing argument. If you talk about making up for past wrongs, people could say, well, that doesn't sound right. Two wrongs don't make a right. But if one properly looks at affirmative action programs as leveling the playing field that is heavily weighted in favor of white males and truly allowing people to compete equally with others, why that would get a lot more support, I imagine. Not necessarily in the Republican Party, but in much of this country. In a Supreme Court decision, former Supreme Court Justice Blackmun said, in order to get beyond racism, you must first take account of race. There is no other way. That has been supplanted by Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, who ignorantly, condescendingly said, if you want to get rid of racism, you get rid of racism, that's all. As if getting rid of affirmative action would end racism. Why are we attacking affirmative action? It's not because black people are taking white people's spots at schools. No, no, no. Rich, connected white people are taking poor white people's spots at schools. It's not the black people who are taking those spots. It's the Jared Kushners of the world, the George Bushes of the world, whose daddies buy them into schools they didn't get into. That is a far bigger problem than affirmative action. But we don't talk about that. Why not? Because our anti-affirmative action policies are part of the whole bigger picture. Here it's divide and conquer. You don't want poor people, poor white people, to be angry at who they should be angry at. The people who are taking the lion's share of the wealth of this country and opportunity? No, no, no. Get them angry at the black people, the women, the darker skinned people. Do that. As LBJ also said, if you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. Hell, give him somebody to look down on and he'll empty his pockets for you. This is how the wealthy white elite maintain their advantage, keeping the poor whites angry at all the wrong people. This has been Republican strategy for tens of years, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. I'm going to adapt before we leave a quick story going around. The story where, in this case, in my version, there's a corporate executive, a rich capitalist, a poor white worker, and a poor black worker sitting at a table, and there are 12 cookies in the middle of the table. The wealthy capitalist eats 11 cookies, turns to the white worker and says, you better keep your eye on that black guy. He's got his eye on your cookie. Okay, thank you for joining us at today's show. Like looking forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com and get the full experience. You'll see the video from this and every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean at podbean.com. If you love what you heard, like what you heard, tolerate what you heard, please like us on Facebook. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Tell your friends. Spread the word. Thanks for joining us. See you next week. Forward Nation Radio. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.